So I wanted to review the relation between integrability and Nikolic Starkevич theory proposed by Nekrasov Shalazvili. I will particularly focus to the case of three-dimensional gauge theories. And just to discuss the possible interplay between those constructions and mirror symmetry or symplectic duality. So at some point I will shift to some results that I accumulated with Peter Korotiev a couple of years ago. So the basic observation of Nekrasov Shalazvili is that if you take gauge theory with 8 supercharges reduce it to 2 dimension by compactified on some torus, and then mask the form in all possible ways. Including in particular a deformation which I'll call an equal to star, which breaks four of the supercharges. Okay. Then you get yourself in a situation where you can use technology from 2,2 supersymmetric quantum field theory. And you can ask questions about what is the twisted chiral ring of the theory. The spectrum of the twisted chiral ring of the theory gives you the vacua of the system. So you look at vacua, it's essentially where it's. If this was really a two-dimensional theory, this would be the quantum cohomology ring. If this is a three-dimensional theory reduced in a circle, this would be the K-theoretic equivalent cohomology ring, I think. And so on, you might get the elliptic cohomology ring if you go start from 4 dimensions. So typically, the dimensions are going to be 2, 3, and 4. In principle, I think the amount of supersymmetry would allow you to go even higher, but I'm not quite sure what the result would be. So you look at the vacua / twisted chiral ring relation. / equivariant. Maybe K-theoretic or elliptic cohomology. Okay. And you observe that this looks like Bethe equations. For some integrable system. For example, if your theory is an A-type quiver, you get the Bethe equation. Bethe equation for an XXX or XXY or XXYZ spin chain. Again, depending on the dimensionality.
So, how
do the spectrum
of the ring look like?
No, the ring.
That's right.
The ring looks like the Bethe equations. which means that the vacua look like, I mean, are somehow related to eigenstates or eigenvalues. Of the integrable system. Okay. Now it's clear this must have some relation to Okonkwo-Malik. I guess also Okonkwo-Malik were inspired by this. I will discuss some of the relations, at least how I understand them, in the sense that almost all I know about Okonkwo-Malik is what I learned from your talk. So I'm going to try to perhaps map some of those statements into this setup. Now, if the dimension is 3, then you have an extra ingredient you can throw in, which is mirror symmetry. This relates some theory to a mirror theory. The theory looks completely different. The equations that define the Carrier relations look completely different, but the vacua are the same. The twisted Carrier actually should be the same secretly. So this gives you two different descriptions of the same set of vacua at the very least. Let me step back. I said something incorrect. The twisted Carrier rings are not going to be the same. Just the vacua are going to be the same.
But the theories are equivalent.
No, because this exchanges Coulomb branch and Higgs branch. So the spectra of the two rings are going to be the same. I don't think there's going to be a map between the rings themselves.
But you're saying the actual rings are
three-dimensional.
So you can represent them in many
different ways. Yeah, it's not the site. I mean, let's say that there is no nice correspondence between the two rings. As I think, the theories are the same vacua. The ring is generated by projectors over those vacua. But the physical interpretation of the physical origin of the ring. Generators is pretty different on the two sides. There are two types of line defects, which upon compactification on the circle have the potential to give you twisted Carrier ring objects. Okay, let me say it better. So what I really want to say is that the way mirror symmetry looks like is that there is the same underlying space, which is simultaneously representations of two different sets of commuting Hamiltonians. So there is an integrable system associated to this theory. There is another integrable system associated to this theory. So here you can think of having a bunch of transfer matrices, maybe even Youngian. Here you have another bunch of matrices, another Youngian. The two Youngians are not related. They're not the same Youngian. They're not related at all. But they seem to act on the same space. So the way I would like to interpret our results, but I'm not I'm not sure it's correct, is that the equivariant, if you add up enough, a large enough set of theories, that the equivariant cohomology of this sum of theories has the act as a simultaneous action of two Youngians, two separate Youngians. I don't know if this is in Malikov-Konkov or somewhere else, but I believe it should be true. So, but anyway, so mirror symmetry acts on this structure in a very interesting way. So there are going to be two different spin chains. Which are related by something called by spectral duality. Okay. Maybe I can be more specific, but I'm not sure it's a good idea. Let me see. Well, maybe I can see one word. So in the context of Malikov-Konkov, you would take a direct sum of theories of the form of this sort, You would sum over all V's, keeping the W's fixed. You would keep the framing fixed and sum over the V's, and then you would get an action of the color of the Youngian for SLN plus one. Sorry. For SLN over this cohomology. Now in order to understand this by spectral duality, you need to add up even more. You need to add up also over all W's such that the sum of the WI is M. And then you will get a second action, I believe, of the at least this would be related to this, would have a relation to both an SLN spin chain and SLM spin chain. Okay? Again, I don't know if this action at the level of the cohomology really exists. In a sense, this was an action in terms of quantum multiplication by cohomology of the Higgs branch. But this is going to be having something to do with quantum multiplication by quantum cohomology elements of the Coulomb branch. I believe so. Otherwise, there would be no reason for. For the two spin chains to have the same, at least the Hamiltonians for the two spin chains should commute, because they have a common set of eigenvalues. It's the mirror of summing over the V's. If you apply mirror symmetry to these quivers, the W's and the V's get mixed up in interesting ways, and I claim that this sum is dual to this sum. If you want, you are considering all possible systems with a fixed number of NS phi brains and D phi brains.
Did the D5s be the D5s?
No, I'm not signing the D5s. I'm keeping the number of D5s fixed.
Oh.
The total number of D5s fixed. I'm summing all the ways to intertwine them between the NS5 brains. Because that's not a, because that's not an irreducible notion. So the sum over cohomology looks like the exterior algebra of something like C and M. So you can decompose it either into a bunch of, a product of n anti-symmetric powers of the fundamental of SUM or vice versa. So this looks like some kind of level rank duality for the Youngians. In the usual level rank duality, there is an action of the affine WCW currents of SLN and SLM over a set of NM free fermions. This looks similar, but I don't know this action. I'd be very curious to know if somebody knows this action already. I think it would be instructive. Okay. Yeah, maybe it's just the obvious one. But it's not. It's not obvious to me that if I look at this as an SUN representation and I lift it to a Youngian representation, or if I look at this as an SUM representation and I lift it, the lifts will commute. Maybe it is obvious. But you know, the level of spin chains have not been, I've not tried hard, but I don't have any simple argument that tells me that if I adapt the Hilbert space of spin chains with various of different spins, I can organize them in a way that this is true. So okay, I have a lot of questions here, and perhaps we'll get some answers.
Didn't you
maybe
draw the
interpretation? I will do so. I will do so later. But, and then there is a third aspect of the discussion. Now, this works in any dimension, but again, it's particularly nice in three. So the idea is that you can take this theory with A supercharges here and put it, so this is a D-dimension. We take our D-dimensional theory, and we look at it as a boundary condition for a D plus one dimensional UN or SUN, depends. Maximal supersymmetric Yamil's theory. Again, possibly work into eight in the same way as it was work into four. And then this space of vacua will be promoted to a Lagrangian submanifold in the Coulomb branch. Of the D plus one dimensional theory. Reduced to three dimension. Okay? So you take the Coulomb branch defined by BFN or however way you like. For the maximal supersymmetric H theory, master form, reduced to three dimension, and then the space of vacua, as you vary some of the mass parameters, will be identified as a Lagrangian section of the Coulomb branch, which is a particularly nice one, has nice properties. So I would like to quickly show this. I'm not sure how this is related to the spin chain story, but this Coulomb branch is an integrable system. It's a trigonometric arrest system, for example, if D equal to three. So we get some nice interplay between the spaces of vacua and certain Lagrangian submanifolds in this integrable system. Another thing that is useful to do is that the theory in the dimension can be identified sometimes with the D plus one dimensional theory with some boundary conditions. Boundary conditions which might be quite easier than the original theory. And then the space of vacua becomes the intersection of these two, of the Lagrangian manifolds corresponding to these boundary conditions. So, for example, this vacuum of the spin chain then gets related to the intersection of two very nice Lagrangian in the Coulomb branch of some SUL. Okay, so this is a third relation. Okay. And when you have neural symmetry, it acts very well and very nicely here because it has to do with S duality of the four-dimensional theory. I wanted to mention this also because we just heard a talk last week about properties of this kind of systems, you know, the space of local systems on a torus-Wilson puncture. And this has some nice interplay with that. But as I say, I don't know how this relates to Malik-Novikov, so I'm not sure how much should I expand on this. Okay. So how to start? So one possibility is to just start from an example. So I can review perhaps how does one do calculations about twisted Carl rings in physics, and maybe someone in the audience can help me get the mathematical language right. So let me start with a CP1 sigma model in two dimensions. This is not a good example of this because this is only four supercharges, not eight. But it's very simple and useful. So this can be described by a U1 gauge theory with two chiral multiplets. So there are two chiral fields, we call them X1 and X2. With gauge charges, 1. And there is a global symmetry essentially two global symmetry to rotate CP1. I'm going to focus on a Cartan subalgebra under which these two fields have opposite charge. I could have picked 1 and minus 1, or 1 half minus 1 half. I don't know what's the best convention. Let me stick with that. So physically, what happens is that you can take the system and integrate away the chiral multiplets. Then you get a contribution to the twisted effective superpotential, which is a function of the gauge multiplet scalars and the masses associated to this global symmetry. I call it S, actually. See, the arguments of the log are just the total mass of each field that you've integrated away. This receives mass M from the global symmetry and mass S from the gauge multiplet. This gets S minus M. Now, when you extremize the superpotential, okay, you get some equations that look like this. Okay. So I took the derivative of this respect of S, exponentiated it, and moved to the T on the other side. Now I believe this is also identifiable as the quantum cohomology ring of CP1. So you're going to have two vacua. When the masses are very, very large, the vacua sit at s equal to plus minus m. And the way to think about it is that we are sitting, these are the fixed points on CP1 under the isometry. See, at one fixed point, this guy has a VEV. This guy equals to 1, and this guy is equal to 0. Not for this guy to be equal to 1, his total mass should be 0. So you have s equal to m, s plus m equal to 0. At the other point, you have s minus m equal to 0. And now then, when you turn on the quantum deformation parameter, this semi-classical description becomes worse and worse. And the Chewbacca cannot be identified anymore with fixed points. Now, there is something useful you can do. Which is the following. Now, in principle, you could evaluate the slope potential at the critical values as a function of the mass and a phi parameter. Okay. Something a bit more useful is actually to evaluate the derivatives of this guy with respect to m and t. Let me focus on the mass for a moment, rather than the phi parameter t. So I'll focus on m. So you can use this slope potential to define a Lagrangian submanifold in C times A star. Where C is parametrized by the mass, and C star is parametrized by another coordinate, which is sort of conjugate momentum to the mass. The symplectic form is really dm dp over p. Okay. So I just write pm equal to e to the dw over dm. Okay? Which in this case looks like s plus m over s minus m, roughly. Okay. So for every value of, so this gives me a, because there are two possible roots of S, this gives me a double cover of the base of this integrable system. Okay. Now, this, as you said, this U1 was secretly an SU2. So I'm gonna write a nice, I would like to write a description of this Lagrangian manifold which does not involve S. Okay. After all, S is determined by this equation. I should be able to discuss this Lagrangian just as a submanifold in this space.
This logic is the same as one.
That's right, I'm getting there. That's right. And you might notice that if you do this operation, you get a nice answer. So if you look at this, so this is a way to describe this Lagrangian manifold. And if you have played around with BFN or with our papers, you might recognize this as the abelianized version of one of the basic functions on the Coulomb branch of pure SU2. This is the monopole, the expectation value of the monopole operator. So this is a pretty nice Lagrangian manifold on the Coulomb branch of pure SU2. So the CP1 sigma model is something you can put naturally at the boundary of an SU2 gauge theory. And it implements a very nice boundary condition. You could go even farther and try to make T also as an interesting variable, but I will not do so. Not in 2D at least. So in 2D, masses and FI parameters are on a different footing. Yeah, perhaps there is something I should observe. This coloring, this sort of relation is the semi-classical limit of the difference of difference or differential equations satisfied by the J function. So if you quantize this Lagrangian manifold, it gives you difference equations.
This
is also the Lagrangian
manifold given by
Givental. Yes, that's right. It's also a Lagrangian manifold given by Givental. That's right, sir. Sure. Also, I mean, there is this work by Telemann about precisely being this Lagrangian manifold in the Coulomb branch of pure gauge theory. Okay. I wanted to mention that if you quantize this Lagrangian manifold, you get the difference equation satisfied by the J function. So if you take the J function of this theory, it satisfies difference equations under shifts of M, which look like this. You shift M by h bar over 2, or by minus h bar over 2, divided by 2m, and you get a multiple of the original J function. Similarly, there is another Lagrangian in T which encodes the differential equations in T. Okay. It is essentially just so PT equal to the W over this T, which in this case is just S itself. Okay. So that means that you could actually interpret this as a Lagrangian in C times C star times C times C, which encodes difference slash differential equations satisfying the G function. Yes, that's right. That's right. Yes. Oh, no, sorry, no, sorry, I take it, I'm not here, I'm not here to state the statements are true.
I mean, we need quantum set in if I have I mean quantization.
But that might be different, sorry, because here when you quantize this Lagrangian, you just get a difference equation, oh. Differential equation for the J function, the three-level J function. Now, if you go to 3D, if I parameter masses are on the same footing, and they both control difference equations, I mean, and the corresponding Lagrangians control difference equations for the k-theoretic J function. But now I wanted to increase the amount of supersymmetry before I continue. So instead of CP1, we can look at the star of CP1. Okay, so at the star of CP1, as a gauge theory, can be described as a gauge theory, it's five fields, x1, x2, y1, y2, and phi. Now we have the gauge symmetry, we have still the global symmetry, the Cartano, the global SU2, and we have an extra symmetry, which essentially rotates the fiber of the star of CP1, the scaling symmetry. Okay. Okay. We have a superpotential, not to be confused with a twisted superpotential. From phi x dot y, which sort of implements the fact that we are trying to describe this star of CP1 and not O minus 1 plus O minus 1 over CP1, which is what I would get if I just did this gauge theory. This phi is sort of a Lagrangian multiplier to tell you that the y's are orthogonal to the x's. So let me write down charges. Okay, I can do something like that. Now I can just write down the special effects of potential just in the same way as I did before. Okay? And I can extremize and I get the equation for the twisted, for the equilibrium cohomology and quantum cohomology. And they're gonna look like this. Okay. So sort of the fields with charge minus one end up at the denominator. I move them to the right. Okay. So this, I believe, is the quantum cohomology of this star of CP1. And now the Lagrangian manifold looks a bit more complicated. Notice that so the field phi contributed to the twisted effects of potential by something like epsilon log epsilon. This is not going to affect the integral, the equation of motions here. It will become important for non-Abelian theories. It would affect the value of the super potential, and it's important when you look at things like mirror symmetry.
What was x?
Oh, yx. No, I meant s. Sorry, change of notation. Okay. And you can ask if you can find some nice way to describe this Lagrangian, and it looks kind of interesting. So I'm just writing the equation because I wanted to just show once how to do calculations before we get into more complicated setups where explicit calculations are a big pain. But again, this happens to be a very natural function on the Coulomb branch. Not of pure gauge theory, but rather of what you call would call, well, it's gauge theory with an adjoint of mass epsilon. So sort of the mass maximum supersymmetric gauge theory deformed by mass for the adjoint. So this is, of course, this is a three-dimensional, for the three-dimensional theory. What was the description of that? It's the RS, rational RS model, I think. Well, I don't remember. what's the name of the Kolumbanchov Gachiro in a joint? So this one was at Zastava. What is this was? I mean, the Kolumbanchov of this quiver. Okay, doesn't have a name. Doesn't matter. Anyway, so now let me forget about Lagrangian manifolds for a while. Let me move back to the Neherson-Shahrazvili. But for that, I need to look at more interesting gauge theories. This is just to give an idea of how calculations happen. Or maybe I should. No, maybe first let me see. So this was calculations. These are calculations in two dimensions. Let me show how the calculations in three dimensions work. So in three dimension.
Sorry, is there an obvious specificity that how, given the 2D theory,
yes,
to figure out which 3D theory is going in the Kolumbanchov?
Well, it, in principle, the same 2D theory might be living as the boundary of many different three-dimensional theories. Because this theory was secretly enhanced supersymmetry, it was natural to put it at the boundary of something whose supersymmetry is also enhanced in the same manner. So that's why it was natural to pick this. I could have also tried to put it at the boundary of pure gauge theory. It would have been a much less natural Lagrangian, but it's okay.
So the rule that it is using is look at the Clayton symmetry of boundary theory, take a maximally supersymmetric 3D theory with that gauge symmetry, and there's only one.
Yes, that's right. Now, if I want to call containing, so essentially what happens is that instead of having something of the form n x log x, I have some more complicated function. Essentially because every three-dimensional Cara multiplet breaks down into an infinite tower of Kaluza-Klein modes as I reduce it to a circle. And adding up the contribution from all these Kaluza-Klein modes gives me a more complicated contribution to the solar potential. The basic property of this function, so while here the derivative of x log x was essentially log x, okay, I should probably divide it by e, whatever. Here the derivative of L is logarithm of sinh x. Okay. So as you can imagine, we're going to get the k-theoretic version of all of these equations. For example, for this tower CP1, the equations would now look like something like this. Where sigma is the ring generator. It is still, you know, it's like, is essentially e to the s. Eta is e to the epsilon mu is e to the m, and tau is e to the t. Okay? So this, I believe, is the k-theoretic cohomology ring, quantum cohomology ring for this tau CP1. So again, you get a second order equation in this generator sigma. And now, So now we can again define both p mu as e to the dw over the mu dm, and p t tau is e to the w over the t. Okay. And the Lagrangian manifold starts looking very nice. So we get something like this. I don't know if I should really write it. This is probably a bad idea. But there is something I just have to show. And I'm switching notation from something I did in the paper to something else. I might have gotten some powers wrong here. The important part is to just get, I just want to give you the gist. So first of all, you get a perfect symmetry between mu and tau. As the first observation. This is related to the fact that this is self-mirror. So the mirror of this tau CP1 is this tau CP1. Mirror symmetry exchanges the R symmetries acting on the Higgs branch and Coulomb branch. This parameter epsilon is associated to the difference of these R symmetries. So it gets reversed under mirror symmetry. But otherwise, there is the perfect correspondence between the vacua, the vacua of Lagrangian sum manifold, the vacua of the theory and the vacua of the mirror theory. Right, and I guess that you can really match the Kara ring, the twisted Kara rings on the two sides, in the sense that this guy was essentially sigma, which is the generator of the original Kara ring. And you could say that this is sigma, is the mirror of sigma, so the generator in the mirror theory. And on the other hand, this is a very specific expression, something like I don't know if it's okay to write a generator on one side as a rational function. That's what I find a little bit confusing. If somehow the generator on one side becomes a rational function on the other side, so is this okay? I find it a little confusing. But the vacuum are definitely the spectra of the rings are definitely one-to-one correspondence. The final observation is that these Lagrangians have very nice interpretation in terms of the Coulomb branch of SU2 gauge theory, n equal to star, maximal supersymmetric gauge theory in four dimensions. Indeed, because this theory has an SU2 symmetry acting on the Higgs branch, and another SU2 symmetry acting on the Coulomb branch, at least in the infrared, associated with mu and m and t, you can think about it as an interface between an SU2 gauge theory associated to m and an SU2 gauge theory associated to the FI parameter, to the Coulomb branch. And the Coulomb branch of this theory, can you read it right here? Looks like UV, U inverse, V inverse equal to E.
When I say it's local systems.
It's local systems on a, it's SU2 local system, indeed, as it is log SU2 on a one puncture torus. Okay. Which means there is a monodromy on A cycle, monodromy on B cycle. And if I do UV, U inverse, V inverse, I get the monodromy around the puncture, which is some fixed E, with again value eta and eta inverse.
Where does like that extra node come
from?
It is like an AHM.
So it's a funny thing that the N equal to star mass deformation is gives you a puncture. And also adding an S and S fiber induces a puncture. Although there are different physical differences in string theory, they give you the same theory, low energy. This is not true for other gauge groups, though. But anyway, under mirror symmetry, so time to say. So these equations essentially look like trace of U on one side equal, sorry, trace of V equal to trace of U prime. And trace of U, trace of V prime equal to trace of U. So you can parameterize these local systems by diagonalizing U and then solving for V. Or you can diagonalize V and solve for U. These are two different Darboux coordinate systems. And this is just the relation between the two coordinate systems. In other words, TSUT, this is a theory which implements S duality. In equal force of Gremlins, S duality is the exchange of the A and B cycle of the torus. So all of this side of the story can be continued, but I'm perhaps neglecting too much the Okonkwo-Malik side of the story. Sorry, the Nekrasov-Sazavili side, so I better go back there. But, you know, showing how this calculation work out is really necessary to understand how the full relation might work. So you're saying there is no room available in the afternoon for continuing. I was wondering if I could just continue later on.
Oh, you're going to do yoga?
That's it.
We could just meet from
I mean, we can just discuss it later. It's okay. Let me just say the things I want to say. So. Start with this example. Okay. Then now we have, so phi is going to be an adjoint field. Okay. And then we're going to have some x and y, which are going to be fundamentals. You know, they transform in Cn and Cm, right? They're going to be fundamental of the gauge group and anti-fundamental of the flavor group, or vice versa. So when you write your twisted soul potential, you're going to have a lot of contribution. There will be a contribution from, there will be n times m contribution from this field, another n times m contribution from this, and there are going to be a bunch of contribution from this. The off-diagonal, particularly the off-diagonal elements of phi will have masses once I move in the Coulomb branch. So the Bethe equations have a lot of terms. So they're like something like this. So this is a contribution from phi. I should try it like this. Okay. And then there is a contribution from X and Y. Let's use epsilon. Okay. I runs from 1 to n. I can keep it. I should give this a different name. Okay. Now these are the bit equations for the XXX pin chain. On SU2, XXX pin chain. Essentially, M spin 1/2 representations of spectral parameters M1, M2, all the way to MN. So SS, the SS are the rapidities, and the M's are the deformation parameters. In terms of R matrices, right, we're talking about something which is defined by a transfer matrix. Where the
what parameters
are the M's? When you write your, this is the label you attach to the vertical line. So the,
oh, okay.
For the transfer matrix. Okay. Now, we push this correspondence farther. Now, first of all, notice that the number of S of beta roots is fixed. So this is the sector of total spin with the if you want n spin ups, and m minus n down in the spin chain. In other words, the transfer matrix commutes with the total spin, and this is a sector with specific spin. And another statement that I can make, what can we say? But another observation is that if I take the generating function of for the SIs, the characteristic I can write a polynomial whose roots are the SIs. Okay. So from the point of view of equivalent cohomology, I guess the coefficients of Q are going to be the represented by representing specific elements in the cohomology, right? So Q is going to be the Q operator of the spin chain. Is also the characteristic, class, right?
Yes.
In the of the tautological bundle. You can write these equations in terms of Q. As a statement that something like, I will never get them right at the first try. let me try it. But if I write this polynomial equations and evaluate them at the roots, this vanishes, and this gives me the Bethe equations, I think, if I did my calculation right. Up to sines, whatever. Roughly, it's right. And these equations are equivalent to these equations, actually. Now, it's tempted to think that, so, and this is the transfer matrix with parameter Z. So you see that the transfer matrix has now been realized as an element in the quantum cohomology too. By Malikov, multiplication by transfer matrix is supposed to be the transfer matrix is supposed to be represented by multiplication of a specific element in the homology ring. So I interpret that as saying that there should be really an element in the twisted Kara ring of the theory which represents the transfer matrix. By the way, these equations also imply the existence of another Q function. Which has to do with the Grassmann duality. I mean, the Higgs branch of this theory is the star of the Grassmannian. The Grassmannian can be written in two different ways. So this is the characteristic polynomial character chain class of the classic polynomial of the dual tautological bundle on the Grassmannian. And there are relations that tell you that, for example, Q of S Z minus epsilon q tilde of z plus epsilon minus q of z plus epsilon q tilde of z minus epsilon is equal to product of z minus m. This must be the quantum cohomology version of the statement that, tautological and dual tautological bundle become the sum of trivial bundles. And then T itself can be written as sort of Q of Z minus 2 epsilon. And probably there was an epsilon over 2 here, I'm sorry. And here probably there is no. Okay, so perhaps, I don't know if this is somehow is trying to tell me which bundle this represents. Represent the transfer matrix. Notice I'm writing these equations in the two-dimensional setup. There is an obvious version of this where you, for the three-dimensional theory, for k-theoretic quantum cohomology, the only difference is that you get the XXY spin chain. And then you can ask if there is some sheaf, some brain or something that represents this. So necrosocialism really is essentially telling you that the transfer matrices can be expressed as elements of the twisted Kara ring, and that should be part of the statement of Malikov and Okunkov. Now I don't know how to get the action of the Youngian. That is much less clear to me. It has to, the Youngian generators change n, so we must be able. But the possibility is to think in terms of boundary conditions, interfaces between theories with different n. That's a reasonable possibility, and indeed, you can realize the Young and at least partly, I think, as in correspondences between the Nakajima varieties. But I don't have a sharp physical understanding of that, of why would you get a Youngian out of these interfaces, right?
What might these guys satisfy for coefficients of those interfaces?
Yes, that's right. Why are these related to those interfaces? No idea. Right. So from that point of view, I'm really a bit puzzled. Now, if you do this for three-dimensional theories, you can try to generalize all these sort of considerations we are giving here. And in particular, there is the very magical fact that if you take the mirror theory, you do the same calculations, right? You end up with the same space of Bach. But there is, okay. Perhaps I should describe the mirror symmetry relation for type A quivers. But first, I should discuss slightly more general examples, because the mirror of the theory looks like a very different quiver. So let me generalize first the considerations to this sort of quiver. Maybe I should call this not N, but L. And honestly, calling them Vs. Okay, I call them Vs just because it seems to be the mathematical notation now. So, now when you write the debate equations for these, you need to take into account also the bifundamental fields. So for each node, you had this sort of expressions. You also need to take into account the bifundamentals. So, equations look like this. These are the Bethe equations for SL L XXX spin chain. With W1 copies of the fundamental representation, W2 copies of the second power of the fundamental, W3 copies of the third power, and so on and so forth. I should have called this L minus 1, sorry. Okay. So somehow there, you only get antisymmetric powers of the fundamental representation. You can only get the minuscule representations. If you want to get more general representations, you can play the usual games in the spin chain where you can take simpler representations and align these parameters. There is a physical interpretation of that. It corresponds to adding the superpotential deformations to this theory that breaks the supersymmetry to 4 supercharges. So anyway, all possible, in principle, one can try to just write theories which on the nose give you more general things. Can discuss how useful is that. Anyway, now you get a bunch of Clew functions. You get somewhat more complicated TQ relations. There are also more general sets of auxiliary Q functions. So you can, in general, you can, these are part of a more general set of QA, B. And there are quantum determinant expressions that generalize this. You have L by L. Determinants. Perhaps it's worth noticing. So here, a way to understand this auxiliary Q is that there is another theory which has the same called Higgs branch. This theory doesn't quite have the same Coulomb branch. Has the same vacuum. At low energy, the two theories differ by a bunch of flat directions in the Coulomb branch, a bunch of free hypermultiplets, twisted hypermultiplets. And this Q tilde has to do with sort of the representations of this. So Q tilde can, I guess what I'm trying to say is that both the coefficients of Q and coefficients of Q tilde can be given a very concrete physical interpretation into different UV theories, which flow to the same thing in the IR. In two dimensions, these are traces of some scalar fields, powers of some auxiliary adjoint scalar field. In 3D, they're going to be Wilson loops wrapped in the circle. So both Q and Q tildes are physical things, and that's what makes it even more convenient that T is a physical thing. And this generalizes. There are actually a whole bunch of quivers which give you the same Higgs branch, where you apply this transformation at any of the nodes. And all these extended Qs are the Q for that quiver. Essentially, this is going from here to there is like the wild group action of SL. You exchange a value with a spin. Okay. Now that we have the full dictionary, we can discuss the three-dimensional version of the story. So how does mirror symmetry act on A-type quivers? To me, the simplest mnemonics come from Venn constructions. You can do without that, but I find it useful. So the idea is that a quiver like that can be represented in the following manner. Now, of course, another reason to look at these brain constructions is because perhaps using Kevin's setup, it's possible to find the Jungian concretely in the volume theory than its five brains. That would be another motivation for paying attention to this. Okay, so, and then I'm gonna go. Okay. So, the number of lines in each segment is gonna be the V's. The number of crosses, the W's. Now, the vertical lines mean NS5 brains, wrapping directions 0, 1, 2, 4, 5, 6. The cross circles denote the 5 brains, wrapping directions 0, 1, 2, 7, 8, 9. Well, probably the other way around, but it doesn't matter. And then the horizontal lines are the 3 brains, wrapping 0, 1, 2, 3. And this direction is X3. This direction should be thought of as 4, 5, 6. And this direction as 7, 8, 9. Okay? And there is a 0, 1, 2 common to everything, which is where the physical theory lives. The idea is that the volume theory of the D3 brains stretched between NS5 brains give you the gauge groups. The string stretched between the D3s and the D5s give you the fundamental matter. The string stretched between pairs of the D3s on the two sides of the NS5 give you the bifundamental matter. So this setup was proposed by Anani and Witten. Now, they observed that there are manipulations you can do to this setup, which do not change the low energy result. The basic manipulation is to bring a D5 across an NS5 at the price of creating a D3 brain, which ends on the two brains. Noting in this setup, I put all the D3 brains so that they end on NS5 brains. In principle, each of those could have been brought to the D5 brain and broken at the D5 brain. So, but anyway, and vice versa. Okay. So you count. So more generally, you count the net number of the D3 brains ending on the D5, and the net number of the D3 brains ending on the NS5 brain. You change the net number by one. So for example, if I had something like that, afterwards I would have something like that. Now, the idea is to apply these manipulations until we get to a configuration like this. Okay. So move around the D5 brains until all the D3 brains can be thought of as ending on D5 brains and passing through NS5 brains. And then we're going to call these numbers W duals. One, W dual 2, and so on. And these numbers, V dual 1, V dual 2, etc. And they claim that these numbers define the mirror quiver. Essentially, you apply S duality, and these exchanges transform D5s into NS5s. Now, if it's a simple quiver, doing things like this by hand is the best way. If it's a big complicated thing, it's possible to define certain things called linking numbers, which are a bunch of numbers which remain the same under these manipulations, and from which you can go back. And going back and forth from linking numbers to using V and Vs and Ws, you can do the mirror symmetry. So there is a transformation that sends VW into linking numbers for the NS5 brains and D5 brains. Let me call them L and L mirror. So the idea is that you, apply the same map to L dual L, you go to V dual W dual. And these linking numbers have a very simple definition. They're something like you take, for NS5 brains, you take the NS5 brain, you look at the net number of the three brains ending on it from the right, plus the number of the five brains on the right, and something similar for the D5s. So there is a simple rule, it's written in the paper. We review it in the paper with Peter. And this allows you to go back and forth. But in particular, it means that if you had a setup like the spin chain where it was natural to vary the Vs and keep fixed the number of nodes, keep fixed L, in the mirror it would be natural to keep fixed the sum of Ws, but sum of all the possible choices. So if you want to be able to talk simultaneously about the two different spin chains, the two mirror spin chains, you have to just keep the total number of NS5s and the total number of D5s fixed, but populate with D3 brains in all possible ways. Now you can ask questions like, can we give a string theory interpretation to some of these actors? Presumably, yes. For example, if I want to consider the generating function of all Wilson loops in antisymmetric powers, which is Q, I would probably want to add some other brains which are orthogonal to these ones in eight directions. Yes, so you generate a bunch of fermions. So I can imagine. And you want something that at point extend along one direction. So I might want some D-brain that extends along zero and other five directions. So there'll be another D5 brain. If you add it, just you can add an extra I don't know exactly how to orient it. But I can imagine having D brains which will implement the Q functions. and the brains which implement, they try to implement then the T functions and so on and so forth. But I don't know. Thinking about what you've been telling me about spin change, perhaps I wanted if the brain represents a monopole operator on the volume and then there's five brains. That would be, that would look like the again has to be, I think. Okay, I don't know. Well, they are part of the story in the sense that if there's the D5 brains that live in the last segment, if you bring them on the outside, they give you the three brains. You just move them all the way and you get, so you can replace them with semi-infinite brains. But in the context of mirror symmetry, you don't want to do that. Now, of course, if you do that, instead what you want to do is to think about as duality, not about mirror symmetry. So if you think about the three-dimensional theory as a boundary condition for four-dimensional theory, for any of four square mirrors, then you can think of, ask how duality acts on that boundary condition. It is not precisely the same as mirror symmetry, but it's closely, it's analogous. Then the mirror theory will give you an S-dual Lagrangian. This S-dual theory will give an S-dual Lagrangian in here. But I mean, yeah, I'm not sure how to think about it in terms of the spin chain. Try to see how the spin chain relates to the boundary condition. To think about boundary conditions, that probably would help. But I'm not quite sure. Sorry, the DST looks very reasonable. Yes.
What if it's
quivered
if it's not
decay? Well, if you have other ADE quivers, they will give you beta equations for the ADE spin chains, I think. The actual mirror symmetry is perhaps not as obvious for E type, but for D type it's doable. You can even try to have it in this picture. So if you want to have a D type, you need to add something called an orientifold plane, an off O tilde phi. It's an, something that has the same supersymmetries in S5 brains. And then this will give you, this might give you D type things. There are a variety of different orientifold planes that are, again, six-dimensional objects.
Orientifold.
And they transform under mirror symmetry under S-duality, sorry, into orbit fold planes, which are yet another. So you can get mirrors, you can get a variety of mirror symmetries. For example, quivers like this will be related by mirror symmetry by things that have an SP group at the last node and unitary groups otherwise. So there are some mirror symmetries. We discuss with Edward, in the paper, I have a paper with Edward where we discuss how to get them from S-duality. For this kind of objects. I mean, sorry. This was discussed much earlier, again, by papers of Anani. He has a collection of papers in which he has all this sort of construction with orientifolds and orbitfolds. And then we try to extend them farther with Edward by thinking in gauge theory terms instead of brain terms. Because there are some things that are not quite natural to do with brains, but you can still do in the context of clinical force pyramids. But I'm not sure. See, this definitely has a spin chain interpretation. It's not clear to me that this does. Maybe it does. I guess perhaps, one could perhaps think of asking Kevin in the sense that one can try to figure out what is the volume theory of a bunch of S5 sitting on top of the Zotilda plane, or vice versa, a bunch of T5 sitting on top of the O5, and try to twist it to get which Jungian. It might not be so bad. I mean, in this situation, for example, you just get a gauge theory with orthogonal group.
Right, because the
normal direction. I'm not quite sure what happens here. Anyway, so there is definitely possibility of extending these things, but it has not been mapped out in full. Yes, I think this is more or less. Okay, maybe I can mention one more thing. There is yet a third way to manipulate this configuration. You can bring all the NS fibers on one side and all the D5s on the other side. So you're going to get some U X gauge theory in between with some boundary conditions. This is a non-pole boundary condition. This is a boundary condition where certain scalar fields have a pole. And this is the S-dual of that. So this is a description which we call with Edward T. Rorschach of UX.
So on the side,
the S-dual fields. So this is a whole Rorschach that shows you to embeddings in UX. And then the statement is that the space of Barker of this theory can be described as intersection of two Lagrangians in a local system on the torus. So this gives you a tree in equivalent structure, so the space of Barker. The solution was a set of bed equations, there are solutions of the Mirov set of bed equations, and there are also the intersection of two Lagrangians in a trigonometric RS model. Okay, this is more or less all I can say. Any questions?
Thank you.
You can go eat. Maybe you can go eat.
Yes, absolutely.